Hey gang, this week's shows are brought to you by Beach Delicious Festival, taking place this Sunday, March 15th at Stonehouse Villa in Driftwood, Texas. Doors are at 1:30 with music from Angela Purley, Topher Moore, Wild Adriatic, and more. It's free to attend with a $10 suggested donation, and 100% of those donations go straight to the band. There's also great food and drinks from local vendors such as Real Ale Brewing, Genius Gin, Simply Delicious Custom Cakes, Cornucopia Popcorn, and more. I'll also be out there doing some podcast interviews with all the bands. So don't forget, this Sunday, March 15th, Beach Delicious Festival, Stonehouse Villa, Driftwood, Texas. Let's get down.
How did I get here? And now here is your host, Tommy Mowdy.
All right. Hello. I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you today. I have the band The Zoltars. You can find out about them at thezoltars.com. Jared came by from the band. They have a new album out, self-titled album. It's available on Happenin' Records, and the cassette's available on Burger Records. He came by. We had a great conversation, man. Great conversation, even about his family history back in the old country during the Holocaust. So great conversation. The guy's a film guy. We hit it off really well. I absolutely love their music. I came across it when I was looking up bands for South by Southwest. I kept on coming across these bands from Austin that are incredible. So I was just like reaching out to them right then and just going like, hey, come on in. So I reached out to Jared and I was like, hey, Zoltars are fantastic. Come on over. He did. Love the band. Love talking to him. We have a great conversation. So sit back. That's happening in just a second. Before we get to that, let me tell you what's going on with me. I played with Skyrocket on Thursday night in Houston. Fantastic show. It was a party. I know I say that all the time, but you know, they're usually really fun shows. There was a really cold pre-show backstage situation, though. It's been like that because it's been cold. And we had a show the week before in Houston that was just fucking freezing. Like, we had to hang out in this tent from like 3 until 8 when we played. So for 5 hours, we were just freezing our asses off. And so, yeah, the cold thing's been a little much. But the show itself was fun. We had a good time playing. Everyone was a little kind of, you know, froggy in the throat, but made it through the show, had a good time. We even played an extra 30 minutes. Next day I came back, practiced with the girls, and then we played a show. Johnny in the ladies' room. We played our first show back on a Friday night at Lambert's with Love and Chaos, Amy Edwards, who will be on the show soon. And it was great, man. I had a great time playing. Had a great time playing my songs. AJ Vallejo was there in the front cheering us on. Zach Loy, my friends from Wild Adriatic who are in town. Old friend Jed. A lot of folks there just cheering us on, making us feel good. It was a fun show. Looking forward to doing more. The next night, I went with Dominique, the bass player from the band, and I went to go see Wild Adriatic at the Empire Control Room. We went to go see their last night of their residency here in Austin. Let me tell you something, man. That band's incredible. Get out there and check them out. While they're here, if you're still here in Austin, they're actually playing this Beach Delicious thing that I'm doing on Sunday. On Sunday, March 15th, out at the Stonehouse Villa in Driftwood. Beach Delicious, 1:30. Find out about it. Go to my Facebook page or our Facebook page, the How Did I Get Here Facebook page, and find out about it. Find out all about it. So Saturday, yeah, we did that. It was a great show. I suggest everyone get to see Wild Adriatic while you can. Look them up. They might be coming to a town near you because they're always on tour. Okay? And so anyway, Sunday, took it easy. Went to the grocery store today. I've been cleaning up, doing stuff around the house, getting stuff ready for the week. Got a lot of Skyrocket shows this week. And then, of course, that thing on Sunday with Beats Delicious. I'll be doing podcasts out there. Should be a lot of fun. It's going to be a crazy week. We're playing a Yahoo party with Skyrocket this week. Also, we'll be at the 1-to-1 bar and, of course, Steiner Ranch on Thursday. So that should be crazy fun, too. All right. Well, let's get to this conversation with Jared from the Zoltars. This band is great. Listening to their music, all of their records are great. They're all a little different. Their newest one, I really love it a lot. It's very garagey. It's just very human, very cool, and like the kind of guitar pop music that really resonates with me. So kudos, Jared. Thank you for making a record that really resonated with me. Hopefully it resonates with the rest of the audience. Enjoy my conversation with my new pal, Jared. Enjoy the Zoltars. Let's get down.
I lost my soul last year and I don't know where did it go. People ask and I don't even care to recall where it's
You know, in a song and in a recording as a, you know, a different, just reaching for a different sound, you know?
Yeah, without a doubt.
So, do you do a lot of recording on your own? Like, how do you do your records? Do you go to studios?
So, okay.
okay.
No, I'm just thinking. I gotta quickly listen. This is podcast. Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. Wasn't sure if we started yet. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. It's okay.
So
it's pretty natural. It just
Cool. Awesome. So that's a big regret of mine that I never learned how to record and like do stuff.
Well, you can still learn how to record.
I know. That's what a lot of my friends tell me. But like some of my favorite musicians, like while they were learning to play instruments,
that's what I did.
Yeah.
I learned how to record.
They did it as long. And so they have these things where it's like this very very immediate. So it's like, it's like completely, you know, they have this idea, they record, it's like, oh my God, this is just like straight from this person's mind. The final thing. But
Basically since I was 18, I haven't had like a piano and stuff, but I've had, it didn't look like that. It was a little guy, four track, recorder cassette thing.
Yeah.
And my boombox was the speakers. But I've always kind of had this kind of situation in my place. So sorry, go ahead.
No. It's so what's great about Austin is there's a lot of incredible people, very talented people who like record and mix and stuff. So I've been lucky to, I've worked with all sorts of people over the years on different albums. I kind of like almost every album, sometimes switching it up with a different sort of person who records and mix oftentimes, just because they add a different thing every time. I like the idea of every album being like completely different in the sense of like, you know, I try not to do the same thing twice. I mean, obviously you could hear a connection between the album's like, oh yeah,
I can tell it's you, but there's a different sound. Like now just listening to that new one, there's a different,
exactly.
Yeah. I'm glad I got to hear that.
And it's like, each kind of, I guess to me, each one has its own little texture, and it's like, oh, you could tell that this is that's off the self-titled, or that's off of Walking Through the Dark, or that's off of Should I Try Once More. And I kind of like that each album has its own sort of like self-contained sort of world.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I guess I was thinking a lot for me, like an album more than anything else is almost like this, like sort of like sonic photograph of like this time of my life. And so like every once in a while, I'll listen back to be like, oh my God, like this is me when, you know, let's say 4 years ago or whatever. And it's there's a lot of memories attached to that. So it's kind of exciting.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go back to the first record. Who'd you record that with?
Okay. So, before our first official record, we recorded a bunch of stuff before that, but like our first official record was Should I Try Once More?
Right.
And I recorded that with Dustin Coffey recorded that, and Skylar McLaughlin mixed it. Both super talented guys. They both played in a band called Shapes of Fangs. Skylar doesn't live in Austin anymore. Dustin still lives in Austin, and he does a lot of like, graphic design stuff. We recorded this album where it's like, it tells a story over the course of 10 songs about like someone falling in love again. And
right.
I really like the idea of
Was that autobiographical or was that dream song?
It wasn't autobiographical, but I just really like the idea of combining different mediums. And so I like the idea of like, you know, concept albums are kind of oftentimes.
Well, you're
kind of a
film guy, right?
Yeah.
And are you a writer?
Yes, I do fiction writing as well. So I do. So to me, I like the idea of combining different mediums, and so I always like the idea, oftentimes I'll write an album that tells a story, and Should I Try Once More was perhaps the most rigorously told narrative, but Walking Through the Dark and even the self-titled, the new one, both have a more loose story to them, but I just like the idea of narrative over the course of an album.
Yeah.
So.
What a dick. I was just listening to it like it was just an album.
No, but I
should have really...
No, but I think... but that's the thing. I mean, when the person listens to it, it's whatever they want to make of it.
Sure,
you know what I mean?
Sure,
and I don't want to be
that's
like...
That's cool that you have that for yourself, though.
Yeah, exactly. But once the album's done, it's totally in the person's hand. Like, whatever they get out of it, they get out of it, and that's them. And that's not... You know, it's not like, oh, you misinterpreted. It's like, there was nothing to misinterpret. You know, it's like if you connected a certain way, then that's...
Sure.
Awesome, you know, so.
Sure.
Yeah.
I totally did. I the way I came across you is I was looking for bands to interview during South by.
Yeah.
And this year, for some reason, I came across a lot of fucking really cool bands from Austin.
Yeah.
That I'll I didn't know your band.
Well,
I never even
heard
of your band. I felt like a jerk.
No.
Once I heard it, because you're the kind of band that I want to go see and I want to listen to.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Something I've been talking to a lot of friends about this, where, I mean, Austin's always had a great scene. I've been here since 2008.
Yeah.
And when I moved here, I moved here to work in the film industry, but there was a lot of really exciting music going on around that time. There were a lot of bands that were kind of like, there was a lot of interesting stuff going on, and some of those bands ended up exploding, like getting really big, and then they broke up, or, you know, life happens, you know. But
yeah.
And then you know, and the Austin scene's always been good, but I feel especially the last like year and a half, there's been all these new bands that have been popping up from Austin, really sort of taking things in all sorts of different directions, and I've been really, really excited about it, because it's like, man, there's so many bands out there, and they're all sort of doing their own thing, and like it's like, I feel like it's very exciting, and I guess also, I think Austin's a pretty welcoming atmosphere. Like, if you got a band, you do your thing, you find
you're gonna
find a community. There's gonna be a community that you could be a part of, if you get to sort of do your research and get to know the music scene. It's like, oh, maybe, like, for example, for the Zoltars, like, you know, we have big things to, like, you know, when we were starting out, the only place we were playing was Beerland. You know, Beerland's like, yeah, let's do it. And like, yeah, I owe a lot to the Beerland, and, you know, it's booked by a guy named Max Meehan,
but sometimes you want to get out and play some other places.
Yeah, well, yeah, and Beerland, there's definitely a scene around Beerland, Trailer Space, Hotel Vegas, and like we've really sort of like there's a garage rock scene around there. But I know there's so many exciting scenes going on. There's an electronic scene that I'm not a part of, but I see all these awesome bands that are, you know, they're,
you do?
Yeah, releasing stuff on like Monophonus and Holodeck and stuff, and I'm not a part of it, but it's like, wow, they're doing something really cool too. And I feel like there's also some more hardcore band. I don't know as much about the hardcore scene, but there's some hardcore bands that, even though it's not necessarily sort of music that I listen to all the time, there's some really cool stuff happening with that, sort of harder music, and there's just so many scenes. I mean, there's really something for everyone, and I think it's good. So.
Can I say something weird?
Yeah.
Can we be friends after this podcast?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, good. Because, yeah. Okay, because let's figure this thing out. Oh, wait. Who produced your second record?
Okay, so second album was it was recorded and mixed by a guy named Mike Landon. Super, super talented guy. He's like...
Does he have a studio?
Yeah, he has his own studio.
What are these? Are these like studios in guys' houses?
So a lot of them? So each one's kind of its own thing. So like for Should I Try Once More... During that, there was a place called Lacuna Studio, and that was being run out of Skylar's house, like in basically he converted like I don't know if it was his garage or something, he converted into it. Mike's studio, his place is called Estuary Recordings, and it's he actually bought it. He was working for a guy who had a really nice, like pretty famous producer, who made this like incredible studio that was also his house. It was pretty like really nice studio, and. The guy left Austin, and Mike bought it from him and took it over. It was originally called Premium Recording, and now it's called Estuary Recording, and it's a wonderful studio. Mike is extremely talented.
Who was the guy? Can you say it?
Oh, I forget his name. The original guy?
Yeah.
I forget off the top of my head.
That's right.
I want to say he did stuff, maybe he recorded like Bill Callahan and people like that and stuff like that. So.
Yeah. Okay, so go ahead. Sorry.
No, of course. And then the newest album... I recorded with my friend Orville. Well, I decided for this newest album, so Walking Through the Dark, so like the Zoltars, when we play live, it's like fun garage rock, and it's like, and so like I made like my first two albums were like these really like intense, personal, sort of like serious albums, Should I Transform and Walking Through the Dark, and I think it threw a lot of our old fans for a loop, where it's just like, oh, I mean, new people were like, oh, this is cool, but a lot of our old fans were like, but this is not the sort of music you play live.
Right.
And so we wanted to make an album where, like, this is more sort of our live sound, and that's why we self-titled it, to sort of, like, this is more representation of the band, sort of, like, if you go come out to see us play a show, it's what it sounds like. And my friend Orville, he's in a bunch of bands, he's in a zillion bands in Austin, but he's, like, I guess the main bands he's in are, like, Obion Threes and Bad Sports, and I asked him to record and mix it, and, we did it in his practice space, and it was, like, we did this album, we did straight... to tape, and we even mixed on tape and stuff. And
that's fucking rad.
It's cool. Sometimes it's stressful though. I mean,
Pro Tools. You gotta commit.
Yeah, you gotta commit. It's like
that's
it's
what
like,
I love about
yeah,
it. Though.
But it's like I have so much respect for those guys back for those people back in the day who are like. It's like, how did they do it? Like, they had to nail their take. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. They had to be good.
They had to be, like, really good musicians. Yeah. So
that's a thing I think that, it's funny. I was hearing some different people talking about this and just kind of like not your music, not the general kind of music that maybe you and I seek out to listen to, but the general pop music, it's very vapid. You know what I mean? And it's so constructed that whatever feeling you got from hearing anyone from the Velvet Underground to Aretha Franklin to the Beatles or to the Stones early records, you know what I mean? Like, whatever vibe and thing that was like the grease, you know what I mean? There's no grease on these records.
Yeah, so
sonically, you know what I mean? And well, the playing, and it's not about playing. Really.
Yeah.
And not that it should be like Yngwie Malmsteen or something, but
yeah.
You know.
So I think about this a lot actually, because I think about like, to me, I mean, obviously music, there's been so many exciting things over the years, but like, to me, like the early 60s, like that sound
shit, yeah,
was like
man.
The pinnacle, where it's just like, totally. I think about like the idea of like.
Well, you have that. You have the reverb. You have the. You can tell a band playing together.
I don't know if any
band has. I mean, do you record a lot
that...
of that stuff you guys record as a band? Like, how much stuff is. Like, when you go in and set up, what are the first tracks?
Well, so it depends on the. So for Zoltars, what we do is. How I like to do it is that we all come into the studio, the band comes in, we all play our parts. I try to make it pretty. Like, as not as, like. Exhausting for the rest of the band. I try to get them all in there in a day. We all record our parts live. And then they're done, and then I come back and overdub a lot of stuff. And
right, but the base of the track,
yeah,
is a band playing together.
Yeah, so it's interesting because it's exciting, and it's like one of those things.
Yeah, it is exciting.
So yeah, but I think a lot about that early 60s sound and just that idea of, I mean, music's really, there's a lot of exciting stuff and. It's just crazy to think of, like, in the early 60s, like, there were songs that, like, literally any person who heard that song liked it. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
Well, which is crazy, and it's just, like, that element of universalism, it's just mind-blowing that a work of art could do that, and for some reason, they were just nailing it in the early 60s, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, there was, you know, with the Beatles and stuff, but just also all those,
but
like, those wall
of
sound,
stuff.
Yeah, like,
oh,
the
yeah.
Phil Spector stuff,
sure.
Just, like, all those...
Sure.
Those girl groups, they were just phenomenal songs.
Yeah.
It's just like everything about them, they were catchy and they were fun and they were, the textures were phenomenal. And it's just like, I just, the idea of playing, you know, because art, in a lot of ways, I feel like art is so subjective, but what's crazy is just like the idea of the, like.
It is, but you Be My Baby.
Yeah.
Nothing that Skrillex makes, and I'm not downing Skrillex at all, but nothing he makes is going to tickle you there. Be My Baby does.
Yeah, Be My Baby's. Well, yeah, it's like one of those songs where it's just like, yeah, you can play that for anyone and like,
perfect.
They're like jamming to it. It's just like, that's a really exciting idea.
Yeah.
I mean, and but I wonder what that was like to be in the early 60s and to hear songs where it's like everyone was just dancing. You know, like you could play that song and
it's
crazy. So
yeah. Hey, Jared, let me ask you this, man.
Yeah.
What part of South Florida are you from?
Okay, so
yeah.
I lived in South Florida from 5 to 17, and I lived in Fort Lauderdale.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
So we had some family there, some cousins, and two of my grandparents lived there, and some aunts and uncles, and yeah.
I was hoping you were going to be from, like, Miami Beaches. I lived there for...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I was born in Miami, but...
Yeah.
I think we occupy both main ethnicity groups. I'm Cuban. Are you Jewish?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
weird. That's awesome.
All we
need
is a black dude, and we got like South Florida.
Yeah. You know, South Florida. It's funny, yeah. South Florida.
There are rednecks though, which is weird because we had like one redneck at Beach High, and he was actually from Texas.
Yeah, so South Florida is like, it's one of those places that, you know, growing up, I was, I mean, it's like a lot of kids when they're like adolescents, just like coming to terms with that, like, and, you know, there's, like, angst and stuff, and I remember, like, oh, South Florida, like, there's nothing going on. It's funny, it's, like, as I've gotten older,
there
though,
is nothing going on as somebody like you, though,
well,
to me. You can't go out and play with a band.
Well, so...
Is it?
The problem is the geography. It's just so hard for a band, for the bands, unless you're playing, like, a huge show that, you know, like, an amphitheater or something, it's really hard for a band to tour, because, like, to go to South Florida, you gotta commit, like 8 hours down, and it's like one of those things. So a lot of bands don't come down there. And so I think about it on one level, well, two things about South Florida in hindsight. On one level, when I think about it, it was still my childhood. So as I get older, it's like I still have nostalgia for elements, even though there even though there were like things there like, when I was there and when I was an adolescent, I felt like, oh, I gotta get out of here. But and I guess the other thing is I think a lot about is the idea that when you live in a place where there's perhaps not as much going on for the sort of culture that you're into, you have to kind of seek it out and be hungry and like really sort of, so like after South Florida, I moved to Chicago and like, I was just like first time living in a city. I was just like blown away. Like all these,
that's where
cool
you went to school.
Yeah. I went to,
well, wait. I'm sorry. Let's go. Where were you? You started out before Florida. Where did you say you were from?
Well, I've lived all over the years. Okay. I was born in Philadelphia. I lived there for a very short time.
What was your parents? Are they together? Were they?
Yeah. My parents.
What's your
together?
Dad do?
So he's a physician and
Cool. What kind?
Radiologist.
Okay.
And he was specialty on like children's radiology.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And so my parents are both immigrants, and so
from
They've lived all over. They met in South Africa.
Oh, cool.
And they didn't want to. South Africa. They both ended up in South Africa. South Africa. You know, obviously things are.
Well, like in the '80s or something.
Pretty much exactly. And South Africa was one.
You didn't want to be there.
They did. They didn't want to. They didn't want to. They didn't want to. They were escaping other countries that they were. You know, they were. I mean, there's pretty crazy story. I guess
y'all get into it, man. Well, okay, Come on, that's what this show's about.
Okay,
crazy story central.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you know. I mean, obviously, a lot of places now are like way better for Jews and stuff. But like back in the day, so you know, my mom's. I guess I'll start with my mom's side. My mom, her dad came from a line of cantors. Those are like the guys who sing at the synagogue, and he was from Poland. And coincidentally enough, a couple of years before the Holocaust, his dad got a job in South Africa singing to be a cantor in South Africa, and they moved.
Is there a big Jewish population now?
So in South Africa, there is actually, because South Africa is, they're one of
that's
the few places in the
before...
world that accepted Jews. And I mean, the reason they accepted Jews because they believed Jews were good for the economy. So they would, no, seriously. And so they would, it was like, you know,
that's,
it's a very unaccepting.
General.
Yeah, so they were a very sort of unaccepting society. But as far as like, if you were Jewish, like you could live in South Africa.
Yeah, yeah.
You could live in America. You could live in Israel, or you could live in Europe. And that was it. You know what I mean?
Well, so, before the Holocaust, there was no Israel.
Yeah. Well, so they moved to South Africa, and then my mom's mom, her parents are from Lithuania, and they escaped the pogroms from there, and so they moved to South Africa. And my mom's mom was born in South Africa. So my mom was born in South Africa, and then my dad, his parents are from Romania. And they were, during World War II, my dad's mom was in, like, a concentration camp, and my dad's dad was, like,
Did she live through it?
Yeah, it wasn't, like, so in Romania, it was more, like, working camps, it was, like, labor camps, so it wasn't, like, there weren't gas chambers in Romania, so it wasn't, like, it wasn't horrific.
Yeah,
it wasn't like people weren't being led to like, you know, like as disturbing elements.
Right.
My dad's dad, I'm not sure if he was in labor camp, but I know he was, there was a lot of, during that time, it was just like, he would get beat up and stuff. And like, just when he'd go out in the streets and stuff for being a Jew. And so they, after the war ended, they moved to Israel where they lived for a short time. And that's where my dad was born, but they left after the Six-Day War. Because they didn't think it was like, you know, they're just trying to find a place to raise a family, but they kept choosing like these, places that unfortunately there was a lot of turmoil. And so after that, they moved to Zimbabwe, which at the time was called Rhodesia, because that place was accepting Jews. And my dad grew up
it's
in Zimbabwe.
So, it's so weird that we live in a different world now. Isn't
yeah.
that weird to hear, to say that?
Yeah.
Oh, there was a country that was accepting Jews,
yeah,
but
someone
just didn't accept the people that I come from.
Yeah, yeah.
What a weird...
Yeah, no, I mean, it's...
What a weird thing.
Yeah, it's...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's... with that.
So
and so my dad... Yeah, and so my dad grew up there from like 10 to 17, and he fled the country at 17 because Rhodesia was going through a civil war, and so so he fled to South Africa, so he wouldn't have to fight in the war. I mean, and it's also because, you know, it was a war, like if he fought, he would have to fight on the side of like the colonists, you know what I mean? So it was right, like it wasn't right. like something he believed in, and so they went to South Africa, but unfortunately South Africa, you know, there's apartheid there, and my parents made a decision. They didn't want to raise a family under apartheid, so they moved to. My dad originally wanted to be like a physicist. He was really into physics, but he just decided, like, look, if the thing about being a doctor, like, you could basically get a job anywhere. So, like, he decided to study medicine in South Africa so, like, they could just move somewhere to have a family. And they're lucky enough that they're able to come to America. So he was in Philadelphia. He was doing, I think, some, like, an internship there. And that's where I was born. And then a few months later, they moved to Boston, where I lived for the first basically 5 years of my life, where my dad was doing his residency there. And then from 5 to 17, I live in South Florida. And we have some family, our family who lives in the States, most of them live in South Florida.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And
that's
so,
good.
Yeah. And then from,
you have cousins and stuff?
Yeah.
You have brothers
yeah.
and sisters?
I have a younger brother. Yeah. My brother Alex. And so, yeah. And I feel really lucky.
Oh yeah. I read about him.
Yeah. He's awesome. And he's, I feel really lucky, that I got to grow up in America.
I'm glad people from Cuba,
oh man, you didn't have to learn.
I'm glad those people didn't stay there.
Yeah, exactly. And then 18 to 22, I lived in Chicago, and then from 22 up until now, so for the past 6.5 years, I've lived in Austin, and to be honest, this place feels more like home than any place I've ever lived in. So, it's been a really good, important place for me. And I don't know, it's like home base.
So, what did you first get into? I read that you never had a band, but you played an instrument. You played guitar.
So, when I was
guitar lessons or something.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, like in middle school and. So in like 7th grade and 9th grade, I was in 2 different bands. Super like stereotypical, like 7th grade, we were in like a Nirvana cover band called Tyler's Bone. And yeah, I mean, it's just, oh no, the best part is the 9th grade band. So no, just wait for it though. 9th grade, I was in a punk band. Are you ready for this? It was called most stereotypical 9th grade punk band. We were called Your Mom. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I got my taste
that
in music.
That is a great name, though.
I know, I mean, so we had some fun, and, I had so much fun, and after that, I didn't really do anything for a while. In college, I was more focused with film stuff, and...
So tell me about, how did you get it? I mean, obviously, you watched movies, and then you were like, did you see, like, an interview with someone, and you're like, oh, like that guy, what, are you kidding me?
So,
I'll do it, too.
Well, I just remember there was, like, a turning point for me where, like, the first time I saw Blade Runner, I was probably like 13 or 14, and I was just like, I was so blown away by it, and I was so like shaken by that movie, and it's just like film became, for a while, and I mean, it's still a big part of my life, but not as big as it was for a while. Like, it became this thing to me where it's just like the emotions that could be conveyed in that medium are so powerful. I mean, the unfortunately, the hardest part about film is that it costs a lot of money, and so that's something that's been, you know, a struggle for, if you want to do filmmaking, like, if you come up with a really good idea that you could shoot for nothing, awesome. But, you know, it's really hard for me to think.
It's not going to be Blade Runner. That's
Well, exactly. It's really hard to think of an idea where it's like, okay, I could think of this idea and I knew I could shoot it for nothing. And so I was doing music while I was pursuing the film stuff in the film industry. I was doing music for fun because it's like, you know, I can write some songs, play a show, record albums for really cheap.
And it's
and
not
like,
the same pressure as the film.
Not the same pressure. Yeah. And it's like, you could have bad shows and like, you know, even with an album, it's like
a hobby. Not in a bad way.
But
it's another creative outlet for you that doesn't have the
it's
pressure.
It's not as high pressure. Yeah. And you know, in a lot of way, I feel like the music scene, especially in Austin, is not as competitive because I think most people have accepted the fact that music is not like just with the way with album sales have plummeted, it's very hard to make a living in music. So most people accept that and realize, like, look, if I'm doing it because it's a lot of fun. And I'm, you know, most, for example, like for me, like a lot of my friends, my main social scene is through the people I've met through music. And, you know, obviously it would be awesome to make a living in music, but like film, there is like people are making a living doing film stuff. So there's that element of like people trying, a lot more people are trying to make a living doing that. So that could, it can add a level of pressure and a level of anxiety, you know. So
so you moved here to do film stuff?
Yeah, to do film.
And you graduated?
Yes, I graduated.
With a degree in?
With film. I studied film, yes. Yeah, so cinema and media studies.
So
and,
you know a lot. You know a lot? I mean, are you like a...
I love film. I mean, it's... I mean, I still...
Are you part of like the Austin Film Society or anything like that?
I don't think I've been a... I was a member in the past. I don't think I currently am. But okay. Yeah, I mean, I still... I'm trying to re-spark my interest in film because it's just like... I remember how important it was for me in my life. And for a few years, I was really mainly just focusing on music. And then I was just like, wait a second, I still love film, though. And like, so, so I'm trying to, I think I hope to, in the next few years, maybe spark some stuff with film again. And, you know, we'll see what happens.
Have you ever made, I mean, you had to have made films in college.
Yeah, so I'm, Were they cool? Well, yeah, I mean, so like the thing is, I think a part of, I had a Super 8 camera.
Oh,
that I,
cool.
Yeah, that I bought off of eBay, and I made a feature-length Super 8 film in college.
Are you shitting me?
No, it was like, it took me 4 years to make, and it was such an intense experience, and that, like, I used...
that you started a band.
Well, that I kind of burnt out after that, because, you know, you spend 4 years of your life on something,
sure,
and I mean, look,
man.
I mean, I wrote the script when I was 17, so it wasn't, you know, I'm not going to say it was a masterpiece, it's not something that I like showing people, but it's like, to work, the thing is with film, it's like, you work so hard on something, and like, maybe it takes 4 years of your life, and like, you might be a different person by the time it's done and, like, not be proud of that thing that initially you were so proud of. And, you know, it was, like, it took so much out of me that after that I'd lost a lot of my drive, like, lot of my confidence. Or it's just, like, I don't know if I could make a film again, like, because that was such an intense, exhausting experience that, you know, I don't know if I have it in me again. But, you know, it's been, like... that film came out, like, I finished that in, like, 2007, so it's been, like, a long enough time where it's like, okay, why don't you try and, you know, see if you got, the tank's been a little bit refilled since then, and maybe try to do something, so, you know, I just...
Maybe another Stanley Kubrick or something.
well, it's like, I'd like to, I used to be really into fiction, like, the idea of, I love documentary films, but I never saw myself as making a documentary film, and now it's like, well, you can make a document, there's so many fascinating people there, and, like, and with fascinating stories,
totally.
And you can make it for really cheap, and so I'm more open to the idea of documentary filmmaking, too, and I think maybe I'd like to perhaps make a documentary film in the next few years, and, you know, if I were to ever, you know, I just finished, I've been working on a screenplay for a fiction film, but, you know, and I'll try to see if I could apply for, like, fellowships and grants and stuff. But, you know, really just I think documentary would be the sort of thing where it's like, okay, I could do it. I don't have to ask anyone to try and raise money. I could go out and I could do it. And that's what I love about music and fiction writing, too, where it's just like, you want to do something, just go out and do it. Like, fiction writing, you want to write, just write pen and paper, write on your computer, and you got it. You know what I mean? With music, it's like...
Well, at this point, is it that hard to make a film? I mean, you got to get people, you got
to
get lights. But,
exactly.
I mean,
the camera, you don't
have to buy
the film. Exactly.
Unless
so it's easier.
Another fucking Super 8
movie. Well, exactly. So, yes, on one level, it's much more democratic. But the other level, it's like, yeah, it's really hard to, like, come up with an idea where it's just, like, logistically, like, where it's just like, oh, yeah, we could just shoot it. I mean, I guess the way to do it is to use your constraints to your advantage. Use your constraints as, like, that's the aesthetic. It's like, okay, I know I have access to my apartment, I have access to these friends, and, like, what can we make around this story?
Yeah.
And, like, I wish I had that drive to be like, okay, I could, but hopefully one day I could figure, like, okay, what do I have that I know I can use?
Yeah.
And kind of use that and work around that, so.
That's funny. I have an idea, but it's so grand to me in scope that it could be a TV show or something, but, like, it is hard when you have, I mean, I'm still kind of, like, doing an outline. I read that, do you think the Sid Field screenwriting books are good? Because I read the first one.
I must confess, I actually haven't read it.
Oh, really?
It. Yeah.
But you know what I'm talking about? Whenever you meet people and they don't write them, are you a film school grad? They're like, no, I read that Sid Field book, and that's
Yeah.
It basically is like, you have a good idea and you follow these fucking structural rules, you'll have a movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something I think about a lot is that element of, like, what makes a story, and that it's sort of, like, in the same way, like, we were talking about, like, in the 60s, these universal songs, in the same way I think that there's certain methods of storytelling. Like, you could certainly get experimental just in the way, with music you get experimental too, but there's certain elements of storytelling that you can tap into a universal thing, and if you train yourself, like, how to think about that, I think that it could be good for, it's like, okay, so, like, you know, just basic concepts, you know, the idea of conflict and resolution, and, you know, sort of, you know...
You mean like even like a movie like Birdman, to me, is a good example of that, because that's...
Yeah, I loved Birdman.
Almost like no other movie I had ever seen, but it was traditional conflicts.
Yeah.
And those kind of things.
Yeah, this guy who... Yeah. This guy, you know, it was a very experimental film, and yet the movie was like... it's about this guy who, you know, who doesn't want... dealing with the concept in a way of his mortality. It's like, yeah, yeah. When I die, no one's going to remember me. And right. that's something that a lot of people struggle with. Like, how am I going to leave my mark? Like, what was the point of my existence?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, obviously there was an element of comedy to it, but there's an element of intense, like, existential sort of dread that they were tapping into. Like, yeah, how do I want to feel like I'm, you know, in Birdman, he wanted to feel like he mattered. And that movie was,
that's phenomenal. Why to me in that movie, the laughs are a lot deeper.
Yeah,
you're not laughing like Anchorman.
Yeah,
you're laughing because it's true.
Yeah, there's an element of
it
taps
weird.
Into like an element of fear where it's
I'm gonna.
So Birdman was awesome. That was
spectacular. Yeah. Do you have any Oscar picks?
Oh, I don't know. I mean,
this is gonna come out after the Oscars.
Yeah.
Hey, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean,
do you see all the movies?
I saw most of them. Yeah, I actually worked. So when I first moved to Austin, I worked on. I interned for Richard Linklater, so I worked I worked on Boyhood for one of the years. So
that was a moving film to me. Like that was a great.
It was kind of like also one of those things where it's just like because I was on year six and just like seeing the final thing. Like I got a little. I saw it with my. They had like a cast and crew screening, and I saw it with my friend, and I just realized like, whoa. Just the concept of passage of time, I just had this, like, really emotional, because I just thought of, like, all the years that have gone by since that, like, moment that was captured in time when I was there. So, I was thinking...
To me, it's like, it set a precedent that, like, you can't ever do a Lifetime movie now, and...
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's almost gotta use the same dude.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so it's like... So I always talk, I've been talking to a lot of my friends about, like, what really surprised me about this year, about a lot of the films that have come out, about how... A lot of the films that have been, like, I mean, so there's always, like, really cool, exciting films that are being made, but they're not necessarily getting bigger releases, and they're not getting a lot of press, but there's a lot of these movies this year that were really, like, pushing a lot of boundaries and really, like, interesting movies that, like, got a lot of, I feel like this year was one of the most exciting years for film in a lot of ways, for films to sort of get, for some of my, like, to sort of, like, people were able to see in movie theaters, like, really exciting movies that weren't just trying to be like, oh, this is the summer blockbuster, this is, this. Like, there were movies that were, like, really pushing the envelope. Like, I saw this movie that really blew me away, Whiplash. I was just blown away by this movie called Whiplash.
Wait, what was that?
It was about this drummer, this jazz drummer. And, like, it's just, it was phenomenal.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, Whiplash was phenomenal. Birdman was phenomenal.
Boyhood.
Boyhood, and then, like, there was this movie, there's so many movies, good movies that I didn't even get around to seeing, but I want to. But you know, another one that was really interesting, Nightcrawler was like really intense.
The Jake Gyllenhaal movie.
Yeah,
I just saw that last week on demand.
It was like a really
fucking really good.
It was a really, I mean, it was really good. Like it was just like, and just like, all these movies are tapping into really important big themes. I mean, and again, there's nothing wrong with, I think cinema, you know, going to a movie and just having fun is great, but I like that there's also movies that are coming out where it's like really
challenging
and pushing you to places where like really sort of you having to think about, you know, sort of like the society you're a part of and all these big questions. And you know, you sort of, you know, for example, like, you know, Boyhood dealt with the passage of time, and you know, Whiplash dealt with how much pressure are you willing to take to get what you want out of something, you know, this jazz drummer who wants to be the best, and like you know, Birdman, you know, the concept of how do you leave your mark on the world, and like, you know, and then there was Nightcrawler, just the concept of how, what will you know, with the concept of media and like, you know, how our media in our society, and it was just all like really interesting themes, and I don't know, I was very excited about sort of a lot of the movies that got a lot of buzz this year. So,
did you see that movie Tusk?
I haven't heard of Tusk.
It was the one that Kevin Smith did.
I actually don't know
that guy that lives here part of the time.
I haven't heard of that one. Yeah,
that was the worst. And Haley Joel Osment, isn't it the guy from?
Sixth Sense.
Yeah,
yeah. I haven't heard of Tusk.
So, did you see American Sniper?
I have not seen American Sniper.
Do you have any feelings towards it?
Like
people do.
You know, I must confess, I know things have been so hectic the last few months that I didn't even like. I knew a lot of people
you
were
made
like
an album. You got an album.
Well, yeah.
Out
so
stuff.
Like, I haven't like really been following like why there's been so much talk about it. But I guess, I mean,
it's sort of the general left right.
Oh, is it just sort of this guy who's like...
It feels like, this guy is making it all look like it's a big heroic jam.
Oh,
but to me, the people that say that didn't really see the movie, because to me, it's a fucking terrifying movie.
Yeah.
To be that guy. And he portrays that.
Yeah.
You don't want to be at war, and you don't want to come home, but at some point in that situation, you can't do either. You're just stuck in this...
Yeah,
in this,
yeah, it's always...
And you kill people.
Yeah,
and the, you know, Jesus.
What really...
He didn't like it.
Yeah, what really affects me, I think, just with veterans in general, is just like, I mean, obviously, it's just, these people, you know, they're coming back with, like, and it's really hard, I think, after you're in war to adjust to normal life again.
Yeah, there was a lot of that in that movie.
And, like, so many people, I mean, I think more people... committed suicide who were soldiers in the Iraq War than people who actually died in who died in the Iraq War.
That's true. There's some number I heard.
Yeah,
the other
it's just
day
like
that
and
was astonishing.
That really sticks with me. Just this idea of like this Iraq War, like it was this thing that was like really edgy and like it was really controversial for a few years, and then people forgot about it. The economy went bad, and people thought about other stuff. And then I thought to myself, like, yeah, but the Iraq War, like hundreds of thousands of like, you know, like young men and women were like just like permanently affected by that, and they're gonna have to live with what they had to go through for the rest of their lives. And like, I just, it's, I don't know. It's just really hard when you put people.
It's all very, like war is just very, it's very bad.
Yeah. You put these people in situations and it's really hard. I think after you're dealt with such a traumatic situation to adjust to sort of normal life again. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
But.
So.
yeah, we're getting so yeah.
Shit,
we're getting,
man, this got heavy, man.
Yeah, we're getting heavy. Yeah, I don't.
So, tell me about Chicago. What was film school like?
So it wasn't so much film school. It wasn't really film school. I mean, so the school I went to the University of Chicago, and it was very. It's like basically half the classes you take are like core curriculum classes, and then like a third of the classes you take are something that's kind of your focus of study. So it wasn't so much film school per se. It was more just taking a bunch of classes and then just kind of doing a lot of films. I took some film classes which more focused on the theory and the history, but as far as the production side, it was just me going out and just like trying things out and seeing if it worked. And you know, having you know, sometimes when you're a teenager, you're confident enough to not realize like, whoa, like, you know, like you really think like, and I wish sometimes I think that's a really important thing to have the way that teenagers have that confidence of sort of like, yeah, I could just go out and do it. It's like, really? Like, all right. You know what I mean? And then it's just like 4 years later, it's like, whoa, I guess I dang it. But it took so much out of me. Like, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Man,
how did you get all that Super 8 film? Was that like eBay and stuff?
No,
like
so back in the day, it was right before they stopped.
I like how you said back in the day.
Yeah, back in the day, exactly.
Like 10 years ago or something.
It was like, yeah, so back in like, they discontinued a lot of stuff. They still have some Super 8 film now, but they discontinued it a lot. And I had like, it was like, you know, just my life savings from like years of babysitting and like my bar mitzvah money. I had saved up a couple $1,000. And I just, like, use it to buy film, get it processed, and get it digitized. And those were the only costs. I, like, you know, blew my... I mean, again, when I talk life savings, we're talking, like, $2,000 or something.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
at the time,
yeah,
you know, it was, like, you know, years of babysitting went to do this thing. And it was just, like, I just bought it, and I shot it, and we got it processed, digitized it, and then edited it, and then I finished it, and then that was that. And it was just, like, oh, I guess it's done. And I realized, like, after finishing it, like... Oh, this is not. I'm a different person now than when I started it. You know what I mean? So it's I don't have the same.
Yeah.
But.
Was it Ridley Scott that directed Blade Runner?
Yeah. So.
He did Gladiator too, didn't
he? I think he did Gladiator. Yeah.
What a weird thing.
Yeah.
So, okay. So let's get back to the Zoltars, man.
Sure.
So you guys have done some touring in the South and the Southeast, I saw. Am I right?
Yeah, Zoltars have gone on 4 tours, and we're about to go on a 5th tour this summer. And the first tour I ever went on was with my friends, Dykes of Holland. They were looking for, they're like, hey, do you want to just come on tour? And like, and my other band members couldn't get work off. And they're like, look. And so I just played
they
on tour. And a drummer the one guy in Dykes Holland backed me up in drums, and we just played a two-piece, and that was my first tour. Yeah, and so it was like it was a tour of like basically the South. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun. And then the first tour I did with the Zoltar, like where it was like the actual lineup, the Zoltars, that was I forget how much later, but then we did, it was kind of regional, like it was basically like I forget all the exact locations, but it was like Nashville and back, basically, like sure. You know, like Nashville, like
Birmingham, New Orleans.
Yeah, we played, I think, New Orleans, or it was one of those shows. And and the third tour we did was for when Should I Try Once More came out. We did this like two and a half week tour of basically like try to hit a lot of major cities in America, but we weren't able to hit up the West Coast, but a lot of, like the East Coast and some of the Midwest stuff. And
how did those go? They go good? It was, I mean, so, I know it's hard.
Yeah, I mean, like the way I look at
first
tour,
time out.
Yeah, well, the way with tour is like there were a lot of hiccups, and like there were a lot of things where like there were like, you know, things. Tour, I see tour as like kind of like, it's like there's so many high points and there's so many low points, and like some of the like best memories of my 20s will be from moments I was on tour, and some of my worst memories were from moments I was on tour. And
that's
my, like
that's my, yeah,
yeah. And so it's like
the last 30 years of my life.
Yeah, so it's like it's like a really special, and the thing that sticks with me about tour is like you really kind of enter like a different dimension where it's just like, yeah. I feel like the whole world, like I tap into the, like it's like when I come back from tour, it always takes me a few days to adjust. Sure. But it's like you're in this different reality.
It's nowhere near like Iraq, but it is that same it's the same phenomenon. You're just on a much lower level.
Well, you're like put into this like situation. It's just very surreal, and you're coming and going, you're meeting new people every night, and it's just like it's a very weird situation. You're around some people nonstop, like you're thinking, and it's just like on one level it's like you're trying to make money, and the other level it's like you're having fun because you're traveling. But it's like it's this very weird dynamic, and it's like there's moments of intense stress, things go wrong, there's also really happy surprises, you meet some really cool people, you know. It's just like, so it's like, but yeah, I'm really excited for our tour that we're going to do in the summer. I think it'll be a lot of fun. So
where are you going to go? Do you already, did I read that you have a booking agent?
Yeah, we just,
you just got with one.
We just signed with Panache.
How exciting.
Yeah, it was very exciting. It was certainly one of the most exciting things to happen with our band, and our booking agent's amazing. And so it's like wonderful working with him, and they're great people. And so one of the hardest parts for me for tour was booking tours are so stressful. I mean, and keep in mind, it must have been so much more stressful like back in the day before the internet, when you basically had to call people up and you didn't even have GPS, and it was just like you had to probably have like these maps and like Rolodex and all sorts of crazy stuff.
I mean, I did that.
Yeah, nuts.
Like in 1989. It's like, so I guess I was wrong. So like 25 years I've been touring, not 30. But like, yeah, I sometimes to this day I'll be pulling into a city with somebody to go play a show, and I'll look at them and I'll just be like,
yeah.
How the fuck did we used to do this?
I have no idea.
We used to stop at gas stations and like 7-Elevens for directions, and like call like,
and your phone calls, the phone bills were probably extravagant.
You
had
a phone card and stuff.
Yeah, like just crazy. Like, and I think I am so stressed out booking tours now when I have like the internet and I have like GPS on my phone and I have all these things. I think I have no idea how like sort of like indie bands did it back in the day, and I have a lot of respect for people who were doing that stuff. Like, because that must have been like a hassle.
Well, I remember going on the road with my band in 1988.
Yeah.
Or 98.
Yeah.
And our guitar player had a cell phone. And I just remember we all were like, what are you fucking, would you get a job somewhere?
Exactly.
It was back when like only jerks had cell phones, like douchebags, you know? And so his douchebaggery ended when our car broke down outside of fucking
and he, like,
College
saved
Station.
You.
Called, someone came and made the gig, the whole thing. Yeah, everything was taken care of because of the cell phone.
So
became a believer.
Yeah, so I'm very excited for this next tour. And so the one tour I left out, we had another tour after Should I Try Once More tour. And unfortunately, it was just, I mean, every tour has met with setbacks. But unfortunately, during the tour, my grandfather passed away. And so we had to cancel the whole tour. And so it was just like a fiasco. I mean, obviously, it was bad. I mean, I knew my grandfather was very sick, but it was just like, after that, I just kind of took a break with playing shows for a few months, because it was just so like, I just, you know. And so this is like the first tour since then, and it's like, okay, back, we're gonna do it, and it's gonna be like a positive experience, you know what I mean? And I mean, obviously everyone was super cool, like, when we had to cancel. It's like, you know, like...
Yeah,
because no one's going to be like, oh, you're canceling the show with us because you're flying to your grandfather's funeral. It's like, you know what I mean? Like, everyone was super cool about it. But it was just, like, one of the... It was one of those things where I spent so hard booking that tour, and then, you know, life happens. And it was like, I'm not going to continue on with this tour, you know? Obviously, my band understood and stuff. And it was a big setback for a couple months. We just kind of took it easy. And then, you know, then we got... Sometimes you just need a couple months to kind of get stuff together, and then we start during the summer. That tour happened, I think it was like in April, and when everything kind of fell apart. But once we hit
your grandpa just passed away in April.
Last April, and
2014.
Yeah, mine, I mean, too. He had a great life, and he had a long life. He died at 81, so he had a really solid. And I mean, the end was, unfortunately, he had leukemia, so it took him out pretty quickly. But before then, he was healthy. So I mean,
My guy went out fast too. He had a cancer thing. But...
Yeah, and he had a good thing. And you know, obviously it's always sad when a grandparent passes away, but at the same time,
that's my grandparents at one of my shows.
Hell yeah,
band just last year.
Yeah, in a lot of ways I feel lucky that I had one of my grandmothers passed away before I was born, but as far as like all my grandparents I grew up with knowing, they were always there, and this was the first one. So on one level I felt lucky that, wow, it's 27 was the first time that, you know, a family member passed away. Like,
yeah, really lucky.
Yeah, I felt like really thankful for that. I don't know how people, like, you know, I think about like people who like lose like a member of their family when they're a kid or something.
My first grandparent died when I was, and I still have, yeah, like, they've kind of slowly gone, but I mean, I'm 46. I still talk to my grandma every
day.
So
yeah, no, I actually, before here, I was Saturday is my grandparents' day where I call my grandparents. So
yeah.
Actually, before I got here, I called both sets of I called my grandmother, and then I called my.
So they proud of you? They like the music and stuff?
Oh, you know, I'm sure they're proud of me. With the arts in general, it's one of those things where.
Sure, they worry about you.
No, it's not so much they worry about me, but I don't necessarily like push my art stuff on people that I know. It's like almost a different part of my life. And because it's like, you know, some of the Zoltar songs are weird, and I don't expect my grandparents to necessarily like them. But, you know, they're just happy that I'm having fun and meeting new people and stuff. And I'm sure there's some of the songs they might like. But, you know, it's certainly that just with arts in general, I realize, you know, it's like, you know, you can't expect everyone to necessarily connect with this thing. But yeah, they're great. My grandparents are wonderful.
Yeah. So. Where are they in Florida?
My grandmother lives in South Florida, and my grandfather and his wife, who he remarried, but she's been remarried since I was one, so she's pretty much like my grandmother. They live in South Africa. So So unfortunately, I don't get to see them that often, and I went to South Africa this summer. This past summer, I go every like 5 years.
How is it there now?
Yeah, you know, I go like every 5 years because a lot of my family still lives there. And I mean, I remember when I was a kid, like I was eight, like it was like, there was so much, certainly there's still much poverty, but there were like kids like on the street, like just like addicted to like sniffing glue. And so, like, it was like really like truly an element of like, just like looking back, like seeing that as an 8 year old, it was like really disturbing and sad and tragic, where it's like, oh my god, these like little kids are like drug addicts and they're so poor.
Sorry, I'm not allowed to just,
and then shocking. They're like distended bellies and stuff, and I mean, the poverty in South Africa is still extreme, but it's not as bad as when I remember when I was eight. And I was too young to remember South Africa during the apartheid era, you know, that ended like in the early 90s. But I mean, all things considered, it's really impressive. I mean, you know, it was a very like disturbing regime up until like apartheid ended, and it's doing, all things considered, it's doing pretty well. Like, you know what I mean? I mean, it's an interesting place to go, and it's really nice to see all my family there. And I just feel like, I mean, on one level, it's really special every time I get to see them. But the other level, it's like, I just had this moment with my grandparent and was like, wait, we could like totally set up like something like via Google Voice or something, where I'm like, we could have this number. I could call them once a week. And it's just like, that's why after I came back from South Africa, well, after my grandfather passed away, I was like, you know what? I should start calling my grandmother every week and just like, just really trying to make much more of an effort.
Yeah.
And after I saw my grandparents, I was like, I should be calling my other grandparents too. Like, you know, it's like, I still want to be able to really be in contact and for each us to be a part of our lives, in each other's lives, even though we don't live near each other.
Right.
So,
hey, let me ask you a question. Isn't a cantor, is that passed down from generation to generation?
I don't know, actually. So he came from, like, he did come from a line of cantors. My grandfather hit...
Yeah, I thought there was a...
He had two brothers.
My father was a cantor, my grandfather was
a cantor. Yeah, he had two brothers, and they were both cantors, too. And his father was a cantor as well. So I don't know. I don't know if it's necessarily passed down, but it certainly was the sort of thing, like, that was their life. And he actually, his wife, who's my mom's mother, she was actually an opera singer. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, so it's very interesting. They both sort of voiced, you know...
Those are big voices, man.
Yeah, both big voices. Both big voices.
So. Yeah. Do you ever see The Jazz Singer?
Oh God, I haven't. I don't know.
Tell
if
me
I've seen
you
it.
Haven't. Come on.
I'm ashamed to say I might have not seen The Jazz Singer. I know.
See, his dad wants him to be a cantor, but he wants to not jazz. They just kept the name from the original one, but it's whatever Neil Diamond did in the 70s.
Yeah,
I wouldn't necessarily call it rock singer.
Yeah.
I would call it like, they come into America today. Like that kind of thing.
Hell,
I think
that
song's from that movie.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, music's been a big part of my life, and it's been a big part of things in Austin, and it's cool. It's
So tell me about, are you going to put this out on vinyl? Do you
have it's coming out on vinyl. It's not, it's so... So the thing is, just because of record store days, the pressing plants are so loaded up. So
When
it is coming
out.
It is coming
April,
out.
Right?
So there's already bogged down. But
sure,
it's,
sure.
I had an insurance policy because I knew that probably things wouldn't be able to get there in time just because, you know, vinyl, it's like, you don't know when it could take such a long time. So I was like, I spoke with our record label. I was like, look, why don't we just get 30 test pressings? I mean, which is kind of risk because what happens if there's something wrong with the test pressing?
Yeah.
But it's like, usually, I've never had a problem with the test pressing. Usually the test pressing's solid. It's like, but it's just like a safety mechanism. But and we'll do 30 test pressings. We'll make, I'm doing, so after this, I'm actually.
Gonna hand draw.
Yeah, I'm going, cool. I'm actually, there's this wonderful person I've been seeing for the last couple of months. And we're gonna work on these, like we have these like comic book, like I bought these old comic books for 25 cents each from Half Price Books, and we're gonna like make these collages with them for the album covers, and each album cover is gonna be completely different. It's like its own thing and its own work of art, so it'll be really special. And so if you go to the record release show, that might be your only chance to get them, because you know there's only 30 of them, and out of those 30, like 6 or 7 of those go to people that's like, you know, like obviously everyone in the band gets a test pressing, and then the person who recorded and mixed us gets a test pressing, and we're, and the label Happening Records, where I'm going to send the guy who runs that, I'm going to send him a test pressing. And so it's like, after that, it's like, okay, we have like 23 left. So it's like, it's just, you know, make it kind of special. So, yeah.
Could I buy one from you now and get it from you at a different time? I'm going to be out of town. Wait, is your thing next Saturday?
It's Friday.
Oh, no, I'll be out of town.
Yeah. So
shit.
Yeah, we can work.
I mean, I don't
want
to mess up your thing, but
no,
that just sounds cool.
Yeah,
and I want to have that.
We can totally work something out.
I really, really like your music. Like when I heard it,
that.
I was like, "That's why I reached out." And I just really,
it's fun. I mean,
whatever it is that you're doing agrees with what I like.
Yeah, well, cool. I'm glad you dig it. I mean, it's been a pretty important like way for me to sort of grow into my own skin in a lot of ways, like feel more comfortable in my own skin, where it's like, yeah, you're gonna make this stuff and have some fun, and not everyone's gonna like it, but just do it, you know what I mean? Like, don't worry what everyone thinks and just have some fun.
To me, that's what it's,
yeah,
like I don't think anyone's supposed to do it for any other reason.
Yeah, but just like that element of like just having fun and like and just like sort of like, not, you know, just don't worry about it. You know, obviously when you make art stuff, you're always gonna like, you know, if like you get a terrible review, obviously it's going to hurt a little bit. Or if someone says like, oh, your band sucks. You know what I mean? It's going to hurt a little bit, but at the same time, it's like,
everybody's band sucks to someone.
Yeah. It's just, and you can't be afraid of doing things in life because you think other people won't like it. And that's something hard for me because, you know, I it's just like, oh, well, as I'm always worrying, like, you know, I think it's a lot of people, you know, worry what other people think. And I think it's nice just with music. It's like, yeah, who cares what anyone thinks. Like, if they don't like it, they just won't come to your show. You know what I mean? It's like, you're not hurting anyone. So it's a really fun thing. And yeah, it's cool. It's and just made, I've met some really awesome people over the years in Austin. So
yeah, good. Okay, so you can find everything out about you guys at thezoltars.com.
Yeah.
Your first two records are available on Spotify. Will this one be?
I assume as well? So. I think so, yeah.
Where do you stand on that whole thing? You don't care, do you?
Yeah, I mean,
it
look.
It gets
I mean,
the music out to people. And people are out there listening to stuff on it.
I mean, sucks I feel bad pain. kind of. I mean, at this point, artists aren't making any money on record sales anyway. I feel bad for record labels a little bit because they're making even less money because of the whole Spotify thing. I don't know. It's one of those things where I think because album sales have plummeted, musicians are forced into a situation where they have to tour like nonstop. And a lot of people love touring, but a lot of people like it's a big thing to ask to put like all your life on hold so you could basically be touring so much of the time. So I feel that I wish that musicians could make music.
I hate to sound like a dick. Yeah. No, when you're on that tirade, but I'm like, musicians having to work is not that
well you make so
thing,
you make
dude.
You make a good point you make a good I mean, you make a very good point like it's yeah exactly
I've always been on tour and I've always had to play shows to make my money even though I've been on major labels and stuff. I've always I mean I got like an advance but I didn't make money, you know. I mean,
no,
I've
that you make a very
shows
good point
and maybe gotten some extra money in a month or something, but you know, I mean,
you make a very good point.
I've made my living in what I really consider like a blue collar.
It's a very like it's you make a good point. It's like it's
I
hard
physically
work.
Go work. I mean I do other stuff.
Yeah,
I mean I write songs with people, I do that stuff, but it doesn't make the money that putting on my
yeah
you know.
So that's the thing. I certainly
I
yeah.
appreciate that though.
Yeah, but I think I certainly that's the thing. I feel I see both sides, and I love touring too. I just
It's hard,
and it's you know, I mean, perhaps even in the past that they always had to tour too. I mean, like, the one guy I could think of who never had to play shows, he could just record awesome albums, was Harry Nilsson. But like besides that, everyone else
he never toured, huh?
He never. I don't even think he ever even played a show. Yeah, and like,
wow, what a lucky fucking guy.
Yeah, but so I guess I think that's one of the things with music. It's like, yeah, you got to do it. I mean, you got to tour a lot. So,
Well, I wish you a lot of success on the tour this summer. You guys, do you know your South by Southwest schedule? Because this will be out by the South by Southwest.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts. We're still finalizing a couple stuff, but right now...
I'm going to throw out a couple. People could just go to thezoltars.com.
Yeah, I haven't posted the dates there yet, but I will soon. But by the time this podcast things, they'll all be there. But I guess there's a lot of stuff. The Wednesday, right now, we got two shows on a Wednesday. We got something through Burger Records that's happening.
He's going to put out your cassette?
Yeah. So Spider House, they're doing something Wednesday. I think we're playing 5:15. And then later that night, we're doing our official showcase for South By. And I think that's a place called like 720 Patio. It's basically where...
Some place you've never even heard
of.
Well,
it's where the Headhunters used to be or whatever. I think. But now it's like vacant, but they're still using it for South By. And then Friday, we got... we got our Panache show we're playing during the day at Hotel Vegas. We're playing that at 4:30 p.m. And then Saturday, we have a show for Panache we're doing at Spider House. I forget the exact time. But those are our shows. We have a couple more here and there that might things, but those are the ones right now. They're 100% confirmed. And then Sunday, we're doing a Burger Hangover Fest in San Antonio.
Okay.
Yeah.
Burger Hangover Fest. Yeah. That sounds good.
Yeah.
Burger Records?
Yes.
Okay. I thought you just meant like general. You have a hangover, come over and get a burger and listen to some
Is
there anything that I'm missing?
No, I don't think so. We went to all sorts of different unique directions.
Yeah, no,
I mean,
I like you, man.
Yeah.
We got to hang out after this.
I'm down. Yeah. I guess the only other thing I should say, as I saw on your notes, you saw, I do have a kids project that Jer Bear.
And what about what's that? Is that available?
Jer Bear, it's in the works. So we're hoping to be done with that album in the summer. My bandmates are really good troopers, and like I think my dream for Jer Bear is one day to play the kid stage on ACL for Jer Bear.
I know someone you should meet. Do you know Sarah Hickman?
No, I don't.
And
think so.
Who's the other guy that does all the things? Neil's on the bus. Neil Kasanoff?
I don't think so.
I'll introduce you to
them. So
they've actually done real well in the kids market.
Yeah, so they're doing the kids music, doing some kids music.
What's
too.
It like?
Oh, I love it. I mean, it's like, well, one of my past jobs, I used to go to like, I would play like preschools. I'd play like little rock concerts for the kids, and they would just go crazy.
What
it was
a
awesome.
Cool job.
It was pretty cool. And I was just like, man, I should be start playing around town. Like, this is too fun to, like, not do. So,
you know, yeah, you can do it. And my friends, you know that place Strange Brew?
I think I've heard of that place.
My friends Casey and Scott, they have, it's a different rotating people, but they have shows on Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. there for kids.
Hell yeah.
They have all the kids.
Yeah, I'm really trying to, it's a new thing. I have no idea how to go about it.
That might be a good way to go make a little money on a Saturday morning.
Yeah. I'm definitely putting the feelers out. I'm trying to figure out what to do with Jared Bear, but I'm very, very excited about it.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, everyone can go to thezoltars.com. Your new album, self-titled, The Zoltars, it will be out on the 24th. Of February, so by the time this comes out, this record will be available. Do you know when the vinyl?
So the not sure
should
the vinyl
be hitting like an end of an ear or Waterloo.
We don't know.
Or something.
So in the meantime, we have the CD and the digital and like iTunes.
Yeah.
And cassettes will be out pretty soon via Burger. The vinyl on happening.
I don't think anybody just listens to vinyl. Like, listens to just vinyl.
That's true. I mean, because you're listening in your car
and vinyl,
stuff.
You also, yeah.
Yeah, so, but that'll be out, hopefully, in the next month or so, too. So, great. Maybe by the time of this podcast, it'll also be available in local record stores and stuff. So
yeah, everyone get out there and check out the Zoltars at thezoltars.com.
And thanks again for having me, Johnny.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Yeah. The Zoltars, people. Go check them out at thezoltars.com. Their new self-titled album, which is their third, is available on Happening Records. The cassette is available on Burger Records. And don't forget to look for Jared's children project called Jared Bear. Fantastic dude. I love talking to him. I wasn't kidding. I want to be friends. Hit me up, Jared. Let's hang out. Okay? While you're out there checking out the zoltars.com, don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can also like our Facebook page, and if you want to get really involved, you can follow me on Twitter and on Instagram. I am at Johnny Gowdy on those things. But yeah, definitely go out there. And hey, if you like a podcast, don't forget, share it. Share it on your social media. Tweet about it. Post it on your Facebook page. Let people know that you like this podcast. That helps us get more listeners. So help us spread the word. We'll start an army. The How Did I Get Here army. People that have no idea how they got where they are, and they're an army of confused people. That's my listenership. Thank you for listening. I'm Johnny Gowdy. Here's some more music from the Zoltars and their self-titled new album. Let's get down.